You're listening to the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, brought to you by Exmark Manufacturing. 30 years of pioneering spirit and innovation have resulted in legendary durability, all-day comfort, and unmatched cut quality. Go check them out at Exmark.com. And Crest Commercial, introducing the 8-Minute Cyber System, the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in commercial battery-powered OPE. Professional landscapers can now replace their gas powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. For more information or to find a Crest dealer near you, visit Crest.com. You're listening to the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, the weekly show sharing proven methods and systems in marketing, equipment, and customer service, educational and motivational, to help make your lawn care business an overwhelming success. Now, here's your host, Julio Tomei.
Welcome, Lawn Care Nation, to another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. I'm your host, Julio Tomei, and this is episode number 454, entitled Spring 2024 Has Sprung. Well, hello, everybody, and thanks again for joining me this week on another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. Really appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week, and of course, for the questions, the comments, and the feedback that you guys have been sending through. I really do appreciate that. And of course, I'd like to take a moment to thank all of the guests that I had on the previous episodes this past winter for the winter interview series. I appreciate each and every one of them for taking the time to come onto the show and to talk about their businesses or their products and to just spend some time here and sharing with Lawn Care Nation. I'm going to, as moving forward, this is my first episode here in 2024, a solo episode. But I think that last year what I did as well is I did sprinkle in a bunch of interviews as well throughout the summer months when things kind of slowed down for me in terms of the lawn care season, once kind of like the traditional sort of summer drought kind of hits and mowing goes to every 2 weeks. So I'll probably try to do that again this year and get into maybe a summer interview series type thing. Kind of like I said, last year I dabbled in doing that and was able to do a handful of interviews there as well. So I might try to see if I can do that as well and try to get that as a sort of a regular part of the show for the summer months, whenever I can fit it in, right after essentially getting past the heavy spring workload. So again, yeah, thank you to all of the past guests. It was, such a great time to be able to spend some time with each of them and chatting, and a lot of the great conversations that I had with them, pre and post interview as well. A lot of times these, interviews happen, and you guys hear, the sort of the nuts and bolts of the interview, but sometimes those conversations go for much longer past when that stop on the record button gets hit. In some cases can go a couple hours of just chatting back and forth with people and some guys or girls asking me different questions about, social media and things like that I've done and things like that. So try to add value where I can in helping those guests when they're being so generous with their time and coming onto the show to share their stories. So as the title of this episode goes, Spring 2024 has sprung. This 2024 is my 19th season doing lawn care as my full-time gig. And I have to say, though, it's a little bit different this year in terms of, admittedly, this is the first time I can honestly say that I actually wasn't looking forward to going back to mowing again. And I think that's just as years have gone by, as I've gotten older, things like that. Of course, there's still tons of aspects about lawn care and the lawn care business and all that sort of stuff that excite me, and I get excited and anticipate and stuff like that. But I think it was more this year of knowing what's ahead. And I've talked about, you know, this many times in past years. And the biggest thing is, the biggest change that I've seen in myself is not so much sort of the work involved or things like that. It's, I would say, my tolerance for working in the rain is dwindling, we could say. And it's a reality here in the Pacific Northwest. I've talked about it over and over again that, you know, if you don't work in the rain in the Pacific Northwest, then you won't have a business, because it's such a huge part of the climate here. It's, you know, what the region is known for. You know, you think of anywhere from where I'm in, you know, the Vancouver, Canada area, all the way down the coast, Washington State, Oregon. Think of, you know, major cities like Vancouver, Seattle. Rain is what comes to mind when you think of those areas. So it's one of those things that's just as each year passes, like I said, that my tolerance for rain just, it's one of those things, right, to go through it. So I think that was sort of part of it, knowing that the spring is kind of that big, you know, I always call it hell month coming up, when the grass is growing at its sort of peak stage, where it's, you know, a lot of heavy work, because it's a lot of the lawns here, the majority of them are all bagged. So it's a lot of heavy lifting of wet grass clippings. It's the undersides of the decks needing to be cleared constantly with wet grass that clogs them up. And then just being in the rain, and, you know, on a rainy day, it's typically also a colder day. So you're cold and wet, and you know, it's can be challenging at times when you're going through it. And it's not just like one single day. It can be day after day after day. It could be a week. It could be 2 weeks straight of rain happening, and you just kind of get tested to the limit of what you can endure. So in that respect, it's, when I think about the past 19 years of kind of sticking it out and going through that, or past 18 years, this will be my 19th year going into it. It really kind of shows what you're made of, because I don't think, you know, for me here, it's a reality. Like I said, you don't have a business if you don't stick it out in the rain and stuff. And I'm sure there's different challenges for all of you guys listening. It may not be the rain, but it could be extreme heat that you guys have to put up with and have to deal with as well. I've seen a lot of you guys talking about that in, you know, the southern states and all that sort of stuff, where, you know, hydration. And I see you guys like stocking up on like flats of like drinks and stuff to keep hydrated, and ice and all that sort of stuff. And you know, that's such a critical part of your business. Where I'm at, we get those touches of heat from time to time during summers, and occasionally we'll get an extreme summer, like we did a couple, two summers ago, where we had that really long drought, and we had what they called heat domes, which were like just extreme heat that, you know, where they're saying, you know, it's dangerous to be outside, sort of thing. And you see the effects of that. And, you know, it only lasted a few days, but in those extreme, there's still, I've seen, in particular, like a Japanese maple tree that I have in my backyard that never recovered from that a couple of years ago. It got so hot that it started to drop leaves, and there's a particular spot on the tree where, you know, it's a few years past now. The tree, you know, it for the most part recovered, but there's basically like a hole there where it dropped leaves during that summer, and it just never recovered fully from that. So, you know, we have that in those little touches, but not like extended periods of time. We get hot summers and drought and all that sort of stuff. But that was sort of an extreme case. And it was in those temperatures that I see a lot of you guys having to deal with, where it's more regular in those sort of desert type states that I would say, you know, probably in the Texases and the Arizonas and Nevadas and things like that, those types of areas. So we all have those challenges in your business that you kind of, you know, have to deal with. And they're all different. For me, it's the rain and that, and it's just like miserable to be out there at times, but it really shows your resilience. It shows what you're made of. And there's a lot of people that wouldn't be able to do it. Likewise with the heat, there's a lot of people that wouldn't be able to make it. If you have heat in, you know, as a regular part of your business that you're having to deal with, and there's a lot of different considerations you have to take with that. With the rain, it's the same, right? There's a lot of there, and it's I always refer to it as like the water torture test, where you're just constantly being having the rain, you know, dripping on you, right? And it can lead to insanity. But again, like I said, it's that resilience. So reflecting back on that, looking at that, and knowing what's to come with this hell month, and the reason it's called hell month with that heavy growth and stuff is because in addition to sort of that, the warmer temperature in comparison to winter, where the lawns start to perk up and start to grow again, you have that, you know, moisture, that excessive rain and stuff that just greens everything up. And then you're adding some fertilizers and things to wake up. And it's just, you know, leads to this perfect storm of conditions to make the lawns just long and lush and growing like insanity for that period. Usually from mid-April to mid-May is like that toughest part here for cutting, where just like every lawn is just absolutely insane growth, and then it'll start to slow down a touch after that, and then we head into the summer, and then you start to get the drought and stuff. And so I look at that, and I look at also, you know, what's to come in terms of challenges ahead for this year. And I'm anticipating this being a challenging year, not only because of the rain obviously coming up, but also just for other conditions, like the weather, for one. You know, the pattern the last few years has been those droughts leading into summer, with them extending, and then just other conditions in terms of like watering restrictions being extended. Now they're like a month earlier than they were in previous years, and they also extend a month longer. So essentially now they start water restrictions in terms of when you can water your lawn. It's basically once a week only, and it's in the early morning hours. And it starts May 1st until October 31st. So it's essentially the entire season. So when I think about the fact that I went out last week and I was able to get my very first mows done of the season here, starting like mid-March, going towards the tail end of March, you know, in a few days we'll be in April. And essentially, you know, you have this 1 month of the growth of the rain and stuff, and then the water restrictions already start. So it's pretty crazy. So that's going to be a challenge as well moving forward, because again, as I've explained here, because we're in the Pacific Northwest, because it rains so much, most lawns traditionally don't have irrigation systems. It's more, I would say, newer houses that have started to add irrigation systems and stuff, because as they've been built, it's been planned for because of the watering restrictions and things like that to kind of protect. But those older houses, when none of that existed, a lot of them don't have irrigation systems. They just, you know, never bothered, because it was not something you had to deal with. If you wanted to water your lawn, you watered your lawn. You put one of those like portable sprinklers out on the end of your garden hose and just watered your lawn as much as you wanted. But you know, part of the issues with the watering restrictions, and it's still kind of crazy to think, you know, especially when you preface the thinking of what I've been talking about here of, you know, the Pacific Northwest and the amount of rain we get and all that sort of stuff. You think, it rains so much. Why would you guys have water restrictions if there's one region on the planet that's going to have a ton of fresh water available? It's here, the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, it's a rainforest, basically. So why is there these watering restrictions? Because, unfortunately, the population has grown so much, and they don't have the resources to contain the water. So, you know, they have the reservoirs for the fresh water and stuff like that, these sort of natural lakes and things like that. And you have, you know, the excessive rain and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, once those reservoirs are full, they're full. And then that's all that they can hold. So it's not necessarily a lack of water. It's a lack of storing the water and being able to distribute the water to the growing populations, which is the problem that they will need to sort out and figure out. So for now, what they've done is they've, cut the watering restrictions on lawns. And I don't necessarily, obviously, it affects my business, of course, because people are not watering their lawns because they can't be bothered. If it's only once a week and they don't have irrigation systems and it's such, you know, early in the morning, most people are not going to go out there and set up timers or, you know, get out of bed and go outside to turn on a sprinkler at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever the, you know, the case may be. And then, you know, have to turn it off, you know, an hour later or whatever the case may be. So it leads to a lot of lawns not being watered. A lot of lawns get dried out. The other challenge for the year ahead as well is the economy, of course. The economy is crazy. We have all seen it across social media, with people reporting prices for certain things, and it's absolutely insanity, like the cost of things. So what I found is sort of that trickle down effect that, especially where I'm at, lawns aren't, of the utmost like importance, right? Where you see a lot of people, in certain regions, certain areas, certain countries, they'll have, you know, a lot of pride in their lawns and stuff like that. In some areas, that's just not the case. So with the economy being the way it is, there's a lot less money that people are willing to spend on their properties and on their lawns. The other thing that I have found as well, as you get more influx of different populations from different parts of the world coming here, they may have been from areas where lawns were, you know, that wasn't what you kind of grew up with, having a nice lawn and the stripes and all that sort of stuff, right? So when they come here, it's not something that they put importance on as well. So you have that sort of, you know, the economy and sort of lawns not being as important. Now, I can understand, of course, with watering restrictions and all that sort of stuff, if there's a limited amount of water, then of course the water has to go to, you know, drinking water and all that sort of stuff as, you know, first and foremost, and the lawns can kind of take a back seat. But when they slashed the lawns, traditionally, the water restrictions started, it was 2 days a week for lawns. And with that, it was absolutely acceptable. You could get along with watering your lawn twice a week. It was fine. I found that when they slashed that to once a week, that's where you start to see sort of a detrimental change. And they kept saying that, you know, you don't need to water your lawn. It's fine. You know, it'll come back in the fall and stuff like that. And that's not entirely true. It doesn't come back in the fall because we've had also these extreme heat events that have been happening more and more regularly, all these forest fires and longer summers and all that sort of stuff. So the lawns aren't coming back the way they were. They're coming back very weedy and all that sort of stuff. And then you have bans on, you know, weed and feed type chemicals and, you know, herbicides and things like that. So it's this sort of, you know, mixture of issues that I'm seeing coming up. And then the next one up on the plate is something that I've touched on in the past, and that is European Schaefer beetle is now absolutely present in the neighborhoods that I service. So this is a grub, a beetle that in the summertime it is very active, flying around, laying its eggs in lawns. The larva or the grubs, they feed off of the grass roots. So what happens is they start to eat the grass roots. This will then signal to the wildlife, the crows and raccoons, that there's grubs under there. Once the roots start to get to affected, it starts to, you know, kind of yellow patch the lawn. That tells those that wildlife that there's a free meal under there, and then they come and start to rip apart the lawn. Now, the kind of key to fighting this is having a healthy lawn, promoting healthy roots, and to do that, you have to invest some capital into that lawn. You have to, you know, make sure you're fertilizing it and dethatching it and aerating it and mowing it weekly and doing all the stuff, all of sort of those proactive tips, proactive best practices to keep a lawn healthy. But again, we go back to those other points that I was talking about with the economy and watering restrictions and all that sort of stuff. It's almost an impossible battle for most homeowners that are, you know, and you put that with the fact that the Schaefer beetle grub is so hard to get rid of. The essentially the only time to treat it is the third week of July with either a chemical. There are some other things coming on the plate, but traditionally it was a chemical called Merit or the beneficial nematodes, the parasitic worms that require watering ahead of time and all that sort of stuff in the middle of July when you have watering restrictions. It's just a juggernaut of a issue to deal with. And it's why in some of the surrounding suburbs and cities, it's been catastrophic for a lot of lawns over the past 10 to 12 years. Now, where I'm at, we were protected by a natural boundary of the Fraser River, which is, if you know British Columbia, you know the Fraser River is just this massive river. Vancouver and some of the cities around there, the suburbs around Vancouver, are on one side of the Fraser River. Where I live, I'm on the opposite side of the Fraser River, and that river was kind of like a natural boundary, stopping and preventing those Schaefer beetles from coming across for those first 10 to 12 years. About 3 years ago, I started to see some damage on this side of the river and knew that, hey, now they've crossed, they've found their way over either on, you know, vehicles and things like that. Enough of them for the population to start growing on this side that now there's really nothing stopping them going east until they hit the Rocky Mountains. Like they will slowly just start working east every year until they get to, you know, to some sort of natural barrier in the environment that'll prevent them from going any further. So unfortunately, what that means is that that is now a reality in the neighborhoods that I service for my clients, like it has been in all of those neighborhoods, in all of the surrounding cities. And like I said, it can be absolutely detrimental. It can tear up your lawn. I've had some patches on my own front lawn, a couple little spots in the front lawn where raccoons and some crows didn't do too much damage, but it was mainly the raccoons. In the middle of the night, I could see them on my security cameras kind of sniffing around. They found a spot that had, I guess, some Schaefer beetle, and they tore huge patch, like right down to the dirt, right in the middle of the front lawn there. So it's one of those, you know, one of those things that is just an unfortunate reality moving forward. So I'm going to be doing a lot of repairs this year with client lawns. I've already been looking at during that first week, last week, getting all my first mows done, putting moss control fertilizer down, doing a 9-3-6 fertilizer with 13.5% ferrous sulfate for moss control. And getting that down, that product I absolutely love. When I put that down, it, you know, the iron in that just absolutely greens up lawns. It makes even some of the most terrible lawns look really good within a few weeks in conjunction with the rain and stuff that we get. And obviously the lawn's starting to grow and stuff, but you add that iron and it's just like, oh, it's fantastic. So I did that for all of my clients last week. Got all the first mowing, so I was able to go and, you know, get a really, you know, firsthand look at a lot of the client lawns that I service, and they are terrible this year. It's one of those, I don't think I've ever had a year where lawns looked so bad coming out after the winter. You know, we had a lot of heavy rain. And again, that's the other kind of part of the equation with the weather, is that, in our, winter times, we've been getting some snow each and every year, where traditionally we'd get it every few years, get some snow. We've been getting snow every year, but not like a ton of it. There's the odd year that we get like a ton of snow, maybe, you know, more than a few days. This year we only really had a day or two of snow, one really good dumping of snow, that was it. So that wasn't the big deal. It was more the rain is just heavier and heavier, is more than I can remember in the past years. Just lots of days of heavy, heavy rain happening, where, you know, in fact, there's an area for my house where you have like the front driveway, and then I have a undercover area where you kind of walk up to the front door. And it's all, like, you know, undercover. So the sidewalk leading up to the front door, I noticed, started to sink a couple years ago. It was starting to just slowly, you know, sink. But it really dropped a bit. This particular slab dropped a bit. But it was always still dry on top. This past winter, we had so much rain that even the slab of concrete that was undercover was wet on top, from it just water being pulled from underneath it, coming to the surface through sort of the porous concrete. And that was the first time in the, you know, 14 or 15 years, or whatever it's been, that I've lived at this house, that I've seen that. So that was a lot of rain happening at times. So a lot of challenges I see for this year moving forward, again, like with weather, you know, the drought in the summers, that is sort of a regular part now. They're talking about, I've seen in some provinces, like the next door province, Alberta, already talking about wildfire season here early in the year, and already imposing like fire bans and things like that for like campfires and stuff like that, because it's been so dry and in those areas. So I can see that whole situation again here. You know, I remember growing up as a kid living in the area, and there was never forest fires. There was never any of that stuff. So obviously something is happening in the climate with the sort of extremes. So that's all going to lead with the challenges. And then we add that sort of, if that all wasn't enough, you add the, you know, that Schaefer beetle now to the mix here, at least for my particular clients. And it's something I've been warning them for a few years, knowing that it was just a matter of time before they did work their way across that Fraser River and start to affect the lawns on this side. That is an absolute reality as well. So I'm thinking I might do use my own lawn as sort of a opportunity to show you guys, maybe do some videos on doing like a full, what I consider a lawn renovation. Kind of showing that. So if you guys are interested in that, maybe let me know. Send me an email or something like that, or DM me on Instagram if you want to see me kind of walk through my process for doing a lawn renovation. If you're interested in kind of learning how I do them and how I've done them in the past years, I figure doing it on my own lawn is probably the easiest thing to do, to be able to set up cameras and kind of show and talk through it versus doing that on a client lawn. And being able to do that to my back lawn as well. Didn't get any Schaefer damage over the winter, but it got absolutely destroyed from the dogs. So over the winter, one of the big changes that you guys may have seen if you follow me on Instagram is that I did get a new dog, a new family pet. I wasn't planning on getting a family pet. My past animal, my past dog, passed away 2 years ago. He was a beagle. And he was my second beagle. I had always had beagles. He passed away. And after he passed away, I said, I was kind of done with dogs. Don't want, to get another dog anymore. Just was kind of enjoying not having a dog. Was planning, these videos for doing like renovations and things like that. Figuring, I'm going to work on the backyard, finally have a nice backyard where I don't have to worry about dog poop and things like that in my own yard and, pee spots and things like that. And that was the plan. Then my daughter's boyfriend got a dog, and he's just this absolutely massive polar bear. He's a golden retriever / Merma sheepdog or mountain dog mix. Just absolutely massive and great, demeanor and very friendly dog, but just huge. You mix that with the rain and, he's constantly over, and sometimes, my daughter and her boyfriend will go out to dinner or whatever the case may be. So they'll leave the dog here. And then of course you let him out to the backyard to go use the washroom. And then he's like, got the zoomies and he's running around, and it just has absolutely destroyed the lawn. And then the dog that we got, I'm going to blame it on my daughter's boyfriend, because it was actually his family member that got a little beagle, and they rescued, and they decided that it was kind of more than they kind of bargained for. So they were going to give her up. And my daughter's boyfriend's like, hey, my girlfriend's family has always had beagles. She'd be perfect for them. So they initially told me about it, and I was like, no, I don't want, another dog or anything like that. And they kept persisting. And my wife was saying how, she would mention to me from time to time, we'd be walking and, we'd see a beagle or something, and she'd be like, oh, I miss Rusty, which was our old dog. And my kids were always bugging me for a dog and stuff. So I was like, oh, like one of those things, right? So then they said, oh, we'll just bring over this beagle. You can look at her or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, great. So they brought over this beagle, and, we'll say that she never left after that. After that, right? And I was joking that they found my kryptonite, right? For me, it's beagles. If it was any other breed of dog, I probably would have been able to hold strong to my line of no more dogs for me, that I just wanted to, kind of enjoy not having a pet, not the responsibility of having to, watch over another pet and all that sort of stuff. But it was a beagle. It was a beagle puppy. She was only 9 months old, and she was tiny, and, those big floppy ears looking at me, and I'm like, So she is now a part of the family, and she's been with us now for about 2.5 months, getting me in shape for the lawn care season, having to walk her quite the distance. I've been walking her about 8 kilometers a day, but you put those two dogs together in the backyard and they just love playing, and they have torn up that back lawn with it always being wet in the winter and stuff like that, through January, February, and part of March here, and them chasing chasing each other around and stuff. So there'll be quite a bit of work there to do in the backyard to get that all sorted out. I did my first cut on the backyard just this past week as well. Put the moss control fertilizer down there as well. And then the next stage is there, besides cutting it, is to get into that sort of lawn renovation. So if you guys want to see that, again, just reach out to me and I will be sure to film it and show you kind of the process that I do there. So let me just take a quick break, and then I want to get into my plans for this season in terms of equipment that I'll be using and some other things that I'll be doing. So stay tuned.
Choosing the right equipment also means getting service and support you can trust. Hi, it's Michelle with the XSmart customer service team. We are committed to giving you the expert technical support necessary to keep your equipment performing at its best. Reach us by phone, email, or social media on any weekday, and we will respond quickly with advice you can trust because it comes straight from the folks who built your machines. Visit XSmart.com to learn about XSmart's industry-leading service and parts support.
Kress is leading the transition from gas-powered lawn equipment for professional use with the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in battery-powered OPE. The Kress 8-Minute Cyber System allows Kress-made 60-volt batteries to fully charge in 8 minutes or less. Now, professional landscapers can replace their gas-powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. And with a full line of equipment benchmarked against gas-powered products, landscapers can finally take charge of their business and make the switch to battery. For more information or to find a dealer near you, visit Kress.com. Kress, we power the professionals.
All right. So for this year, for 2024, I am going to be diving even more into battery power. If you guys follow me, if you've listened to the podcast, you know how much I truly love battery-powered tools. I have fully embraced battery-powered tools. I would love to go 100% battery with everything if I possibly could. And by that, I mean I would, if it made financial sense. Unfortunately, it doesn't right now with a bunch of the prices on stuff to do that type of a switch. But I mean, like electric truck, electric, you know, big size mowers, and then on top of everything else that I run as well. Unfortunately, that doesn't make sense. And given sort of the challenges that I talked about ahead and some other things that I've, you know, always talked about, the price of real estate, things like that, causing sort of larger properties to be sold and be subdivided into smaller properties, things like that. It's the trend that continues here, just the unaffordability and all that sort of stuff. So properties getting smaller and smaller, and all those really nice big properties, including the one that I think I've talked about in the past, about a client who you could tell this house was like one of the original like farmhouses in the area, that has, you know, a bunch of houses that were built maybe 20 or 30 years ago around it now, that were all on the like the fields and pastures that this farm was on. And the owner telling me that I was like the first person in like four family generations to mow that lawn, that it was always a family member that has mowed that lawn. Or what was left of the lawn around the house there. That house is for sale. So 100% that house will be torn down and that property subdivided and turned into smaller houses or apartments or townhouses or whatever the case may be. There's no way that that'll be just one house on that property. So that's the trend kind of going forward. So I'm not sure, you know, with as much as I would love to go to like a large battery powered, you know, sit down zero turn or something like that, or stand on zero turn, I don't know if for me that would be sort of like the long term goal to do. I'd love it in the interim, like a 36 inch or something like that. But ultimately, I can see years down the road that everything going to smaller, at least in the area that I service, that, you know, you could literally go back to a business that has no large mowers anymore and just go back to 21-inch mowers, 30-inch mowers, that sort of thing, and just service every property with that, which from a profitability standpoint is fantastic because there's a lot less capital that you need to put out for a business like that versus the investment required, especially if you're considering going electric and stuff where there's such a crazy premium on that. So I'm kind of on the fence on what I would want to do with something like that. As much as I would love the idea of going full battery with everything, again, including the truck and that as well, especially for the route that I service. Again, it's kind of a catch-22. I think I talked about in a previous episode, with my diesel truck, doing an oil change on it, and the oil change equates to like once a year that I do an oil change on that truck, because my route density is just so good that, on the little sticker, that they give you at the oil change place. And, it says, every 8,000 kilometers, to do an oil change. So I'm in Canada, it's by kilometer. And my truck hit, 5,000 kilometers in a year. So it doesn't get driven a lot because the route density is so tight. So it's one of those things where the cost of a electric truck wouldn't make sense because I don't drive it enough to, make that extra cost of investment worth it. But at the same time, because electric trucks, if you're going to be towing and stuff with it, aren't the most efficient, the fact that I don't drive a lot would actually work with that. So it's one of those catch-22s for that sort of thing that, it's just one of those unfortunate things. Although that you do see the cost of some electric vehicles coming down. I have seen that. I have noticed that. It's still one of those things that I'm not quite sure yet what I want to do. So I'm probably just going to keep hanging on to my diesel truck for the time being to see how that goes. But it's getting more and more, more and more little gremlins popping up with my truck each year that go on electrical things and things like that that pop up. So we'll have to monitor that situation. Like I've talked about in the past as well, it's one of those things, right? I don't see the need for replacing the truck and getting into like a payment or things like that if I don't need to or just for the sake of doing it. But, if my truck were to suddenly be in a situation where, it's not no longer reliable or things like that, and it's kind of, I feel it's kind of going in that direction with the age that it's in and the amount of kilometers and stuff on it, and with needing, it's going to be needing new diesel injectors and things like that. It's one of those things where it's, I'm on the fence with that, and it's hard for me to justify putting the money into doing diesel injectors and all that sort of stuff, which would, if I got a shop around here to do it, would be in the $8,000 range for that. So it's kind of hard to justify putting $8,000 for that just one job on top of the list of things that the truck needs with its age to get done versus just getting a newer truck. So, it's one of those things where, if it comes down to it and I need to get another truck, then, I have no qualms about that because it is for work. But I'd really like I said, I'd like to go to an electric truck if I could, just because, hey, why not? Like I said, I'm sort of the tech guy. We've had such a good experience with our electric car in terms of the cost to operate it is like pennies a day versus the fuel. For example, using the electric car, my kids use it to commute about an hour each way to university every day. And in a year and a half or so, it was either a year or a year and a half. I can't remember exactly what our calculations were, but it was based on kilometers driven, that it was essentially, it was $700 in electricity costs versus $7,000 the year before in fuel costs for the four-cylinder car to drive that same distance back and forth to the university. So it's crazy the how little it costs to use an electric car if you are able, like if you have a house and you're able to charge it yourself in your driveway. You're not paying for like fast charging and things like that, which will then get expensive. But if you're able to charge it overnight in your driveway, that sort of thing, it's like pennies to operate for the cost of electricity that you get you know, delivered to your house. So it's one of those things. Yeah, it's the truck's sort of going to be on a monitoring situation. So in terms of mowers and trimmers and all that sort of stuff, for this year, 2024, I'm going to be using the majority is going to be all the Crest stuff. I switched or, you know, was able to start trying that Crest stuff, including their 11 amp hour batteries, their plug-in rapid charger. It's a 30 watt charger or 30 amp charger. I can't remember exactly. Then their 4 amp hour commercial batteries, also have a bunch of their 5 amp hour prosumer batteries, a couple of them that came with the handheld blower. And then over the winter, Crest was nice enough to send me their a snowblower for me to try out and make a video on. And I was able to do that during that snow day that we had. That unit there came with four of the prosumer 5 amp hour batteries. So I've got a bunch of the Crest batteries available to me to use. So it makes sense to just use the Crest, you know, the whole Crest stuff. Their batteries have been absolutely fantastic. It just blows my mind how good their battery technology is. It's it just never ceases to amaze me how good they are. I'm going to be predominantly using the Crest trimmer, their edger, using the handheld blower. I also have the backpack blower, but I don't traditionally use backpack blowers until the fall. But if I need it, I've got it. But I'll probably be using the handheld blower for most of the year until we get back into the fall again. I did use it for the cleanups last year. That was the first 2023 fall was the first fall season that I used no gas blowers at all. I was able to go through the entire season without using any of my gas-powered backpack blowers. The Crest battery-powered backpack blower had more than enough power at 900 CFM and 35 newtons of force to do the leaf cleanups that I do for the residential homes that I'm doing. I'm not doing, you know, huge acreages, you know, so to speak, like, you know, covered in leaves and stuff. The one property that I do have like that, I use the Navigator on to mow, so it's collecting the leaves anyways, and they have on-site a compost pile that I dump all the leaves into and stuff. So there's not a lot of blowing there to do, even in the fall. I'm just blowing, you know, just smaller areas and stuff. So, you know, the battery power backpack blower is fantastic. It's been able to handle everything that I've thrown at it without much worry about having to have, you know, a ton of batteries and things like that, because they're just so good at how long they last for me. And just, you know, the quiet and the, you know, the amount of power that they can put out and stuff is, it's just been just a total mind shift for me to think about, you know, when I first started using the stuff, the battery powered mowers and stuff like that, it was interesting because I'd always carry the gas stuff with me just in case. And, you know, as I got, you know, through my first week using that stuff last August and then kind of seeing what was capable, I started to feel more and more confident about not having the gas powered, you know, equipment with me for, you know, that just in case sort of scenario, and kind of went on throughout the season, then got into the fall season with the units, and on certain days, or you know, whatever the case may be, if it was like heavy, you know, fall and stuff like that, I would get into situations where, like, if I used up you know, the battery on one, because my route's so dense, when I'd stop at home to use the washroom or stuff, I could throw the battery on, you know, the rapid charger, then go out with, you know, the other batteries that I had, and then that battery would be, you know, ready so quickly, because it only takes, with the rapid charger, even their 11 amp hour battery, only takes 24 minutes from 0 to 100%. So you could go out and do a couple lawns or whatever with the other batteries, and then, you know, it's more than ready to use again, later on. If you have that cyber system that they have, that battery will be charged from 0 to 108 minutes, which is insanity. But I don't have the rapid charger. I don't have the cyber system. I have the rapid charger that plugs into, you know, your outlet. You could, I guess, technically take that with you and plug it into somebody's house if you wanted to. But, for me, I don't have the need for it. The batteries are just fantastic. I can get so many lawns done, with, you know, the single, 11 amp hour battery, in their 21 inch mower. That's not even a concern, to be able to do that. And I've got a couple of the 11 amp hour batteries. And then, of course, you can use the other nice thing with the Crest is that you can use even the smaller batteries in. So like the 4 amp hours or the 5 amp hour prosumer batteries, and you can use the prosumers or the commercial batteries. They're all interchangeable. It's just a great overall system. And it has done really well for me. So I'm going to continue to use that Crest 21-inch mower. I was able to, when I first got the Crest mower, it came with a sort of all-in-one type of blade. And a lot of battery-powered mowers will have this sort of a blade. It's a blade that's really tuned more for efficiency of battery life than it is for cutting. So it's going to give you a really extended run time. And it's, for the most part, going to cut fine in normal type conditions. But if you get into sort of these sort of extremes, like Pacific Northwest, where grass is always wet, that sort of thing, and really heavy and long, or get into leaf season, it's not quite a high lift blade, because the high lift blade, I guess, creates some air turbulence there that would decrease your runtime on a battery. So the mower comes with that other sort of high efficiency blade. So I did reach out to Crest, and they did send me the different optional blades for the mower. So they sent me their true, like, high lift blade, and I was able to use that at the tail end by the time it came. Tail end of leaf cleanup season. Up till then, I was using the Exmark commercial 21, because that one has a high lift blade on it, and I was using that for all the leaf cleanups for the smaller properties. So I was able at the tail end to use the Crest when the blades came, to switch them over and try them out, and it performed really well with the leaf cleanups, but I want to be able to test it in sort of that hell month when the grass is like crazy and wet and stuff. The other thing they sent me was their dedicated mulch blade for that unit. So I want to be able to test that out as well too, and see how that affects battery runtime. If you're going to go mulching and stuff like that, I'll try that and see how that'll affect, and also the cut quality and things like that, using the mulch blade versus the high lift blade and bagging the lawns and stuff like that. So I'm going to be using a lot of the Crest commercial 21-inch mower. I'm going to be using, again, the string trimmer, their commercial string trimmer, their commercial edger. I already started using that last week again, pulling that out to get the lawns edged for all the cuts that I did last week. And then the handheld blower, of course, again, another one that's fantastic. Like, that one is one where that handheld blower, for the lawns that I do, where I can get through the entire day on one battery, on one of those 5 amp hour batteries, pop it in. And for the small properties that I'm doing, I'm blowing the clippings off the driveways and sidewalks and things like that. it's fantastic. It's just, I just love the battery stuff, especially when you come after winter here. And just for an example, like I was like getting mowers ready to do the, you know, get the mowing and stuff done. And I got the turf tracer out and the Navigator, got them running and stuff warmed up. And I started to do the oil change on the turf tracer, taking the blades off, sharpening it, had to clean the deck and stuff like that. You know, just some, you know, minor maintenance and stuff, getting it ready to go. But it still took me, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes or whatever to do the oil change and clean out the deck and sharpen the blades and you know, that sort of stuff. And, you know, versus the battery powered mowers, of course, granted much smaller mowers, but it's basically, you know, there's no oil to change, there's no spark plugs, there's no air filters, there's no gas to deal with. It's, you know, I took the blade off, sharpened it, put the blade back on, and you know, you're ready to go. It's just so simple to deal with. So I've really been enjoying the battery powered equipment. You know, it took me less time, you know, combined the Xmark Commercial 21 battery and the Crest battery mower, getting the blades sharpened and back on, than it did, you know, to do the oil change and all that on just the one, you know, a bigger mower after the winter. And of course, the trimmers and stuff and blowers don't have any maintenance to do at all. It's just, you know, take the batteries out of winter storage for the winter. You store the batteries for all the brands. It doesn't matter what they are. With these lithium batteries, they all suggest that you store them at roughly about 50% charge. So that's how I had them in the winter. I pulled them all inside the house, all the batteries, so that they wouldn't be out in the cold. The cold battery, lithium batteries do not like, you know, the cold. I didn't know how cold it was going to get in the garage. So I brought in all the batteries into the house, half charge, to store just at room temperature. So now that, you know, spring is here, it's not, you know, below freezing outside anymore. Brought all the batteries back into the garage. Charged them all back up, got them all back to 100%. And, you know, that's it. That's all. That's your, you know, preparing for spring with your battery stuff. So, yeah, I'm going to be going pretty heavy with that. I've been fortunate enough as well to be able to test a bunch of Milwaukee's equipment as well. And I'll be doing a lot of content on those as well. They sent me some goodies over the winter to try out. I did some videos already. You may have seen, I got their handheld battery powered pruners, which are fantastic. They're also their extendable pole, telescoping pole pruner as well. That's another one that I'm super excited about. It goes from 7 feet to 10 feet. And then, of course, you're holding it, so you're getting a good, you know, 14, 15 feet of height there to be able to prune trees with just the press of a button. That unit, especially is, pretty neat, to see, and the power, that those units have. If you haven't seen my videos on that, head over to the YouTube channel and check those out. Look like fantastic tools. I'm really excited about the handheld ones, the little, I think they're 8-inch handheld, pruning shears, M12, batteries that they use, just fantastic. You know, just, you know, press the button, you know, especially if you have any issues, I can see them fantastic as, you know, people get older and stuff like that, especially if you've got tons of cuts to do, lots of pruning to do, to just sort of save that fatigue on your hands. You're just pressing a button versus actually having to, you know, physically squeeze some pruners to cut through, you know, branches and stuff like that. Just push the button and it slices through them with ease. So I'm going to be doing a lot of battery. It's going to be pretty much all battery except for the truck, and the Xmark Navigator and the Turf Tracer are the main units there, and then that get used on a regular basis. Some of the tools that I'll be using that for this year again that also won't be battery powered but aren't used extensively is Old Betsy, my Bluebird 424 aerator. I will use that again, and my Bluebird power rake for any of the lawn renovations. I think that about covers it. In fact, I am going to go through all of my equipment, and I'm going to start clearing out stuff that I am not going to use anymore. So I'm probably going to start listing some things on Craigslist and Marketplace and whatever the case may be. So if you're local and you are looking for equipment, a lot of it is barely used. A lot of it's in fantastic condition, but all gas powered. There's going to be some good deals happening. Everything from all of the Echo equipment that I've gathered the last couple of years, including a couple of two PB770 backpack blowers, a PB9010 backpack blower, the 2620 series. I've got the 2620 trimmer, the 2620T trimmer, the 2620 bed redefiner, the 2620 pass with the bristle broom and paddle broom attachments, as well as the tiller attachment. I think it's a 2520 handheld blower. I've got a steel KM110 combi system with a bunch of attachments. I'll probably get rid of my Honda commercial mowers as well, the HRC 216s. I just no longer use them anymore. So yeah, I'm going to be clearing a bunch of stuff, clearing a bunch of space to make room. I've got a Craftsman 27-inch snowblower. I'll probably save that for the fall and list that for the next winter to get rid of that as well, make some space since I've got some, you know, battery powered snow blowers now, and just to start making room for that stuff, just because, you know, there's no sense in keeping it if I'm not going to be using it, and I might as well clear up that space and get rid of it. So if you're local and you're looking at making some equipment purchases, you might want to reach out to me. You can either reach out through email or, again, DM me on Instagram if you're interested in any of those things that I listed there. They will be all going up for sale during this year. So that is my plan for this year, is basically go heavier into the battery-powered stuff and start clearing out that gas stuff, kind of see what these challenges have in store for me this year in terms of the Schaefer Beetle and how that is handled, how customers react to that. Again, like I said, I've been warning them for many, many years with the Schaefer Beetle and seeing how they want to be able to handle that moving forward. That's going to be a very dynamic situation with a lot of them, not knowing what hit them, basically. And that's exactly what I told them going into it a few years, kind of warning people, saying, you know, people aren't going to know what hit them when this happens. A lot of people didn't even, they live and they work in, you know, the city or the suburb they're in, and they don't travel to the other cities and suburbs. So a lot of them I talked to, and even though it was a problem for many years in the main city of Vancouver and surrounding cities there on that other side of the Fraser River, a lot of them had not even seen it, even though it was like 10, 12 years that these lawns have been dealing with it. And you can see whole neighborhoods that are affected that they just, you know, I hadn't even heard of it. So, you know, it's one of those things I kept warning them about, like telling them, like, this is pretty bad and it's coming over here and people aren't even going to have a clue what hit them, right? And this is the year that that has happened. So definitely big changes going forward with all the challenges in lawn care and having a lawn care business. And I was telling a client the other day, we were talking about it. All those things, was talking about the weather, the things, and he was, kind of nodding in agreement, going like, yeah, that's pretty challenging. Like, for a lawn care business, going forward? Like, and I was like, yeah, like it's interesting to think about, to say like how many more years of this is my 19th season, but how many more years can I do this? You know, there's going to have to be some changes going forward, because I think lawn care, and then you start adding the fact that, you know, a lot of houses I start seeing putting synthetic turf in, and a lot of, you know, technology, robotic mowers, things like that. It's definitely changing what it will mean to be a lawn care business going forward, at least in the area that I'm in. So we'll have to see how that plays out and goes, and kind of figure it out along the way, and kind of adapt and go with it, right? What's that famous saying that I quote all the time, Wayne Gretzky, right? Skate to where the puck is going, not to where the puck has been. So I'll leave you guys with that. And that's it for this one, guys. So here's to wishing you guys all overwhelming success and freedom in your lawn care business. Bye for now.